Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. One of the other roles, I have a number of roles that I fulfil, and one of the most recent roles, as along with my colleague Professor Nick Dade, is as the director of the Levy Hume Research Centre for Forensic Science. But in addition to that, I'm also the University of Dundee's Deputy Principal for Public Engagement. And of all of the sciences, forensic science is the easiest to engage with the public. We can get anybody enthralled on murder, on any sort of aspect of criminality. And because it's a science that is so accessible to the public, the public believe they understand it. And the communication of our science to the juries, to the judiciary, can sometimes be challenging. But it is, of course, a very easy audience because it is often a science that we think we understand. When we try to define what forensic science is, which we tried to do just very, very quickly with Sir Mark before we started, we got a little bit sort of tongue-tied because it's one of those things that we all think we know what it is, but as you start to look at it closer down the microscope, it's like the ghost in the mist. It disappears around the science. And probably the only way that we can define it is that it's a discipline of disciplines that is sometimes used by a courtroom. Oh, that's not a very good definition whatsoever, is it? But, you know, it does work. One of the key outputs from this report that we're talking about this evening asked us how to consider how forensic science, the approach that it has to application-based research, can translate into government policy and private sector growth through increasing the opportunities for and the value of both emerging and existing markets and public service delivery. So why forensic science? Forensic science is not, by and large, a discovery area of science. One of the definitions used by Sir Paul Nurse, the previous president of the Royal Society, in his report on research funding. It's not a rigid, discipline-specific set of individuals, but it's comprised of a tapestry of practitioners, researchers, loose multidisciplinary components. And in being that, what it has is the potential to break down associated barriers that we find at the intersection between more traditional silos of science. To understand what I mean, if we consider what's referred to in the business modelling world as the Medici effect, the Medici effect relates to the remarkable burst of creativity in the 15th century Italy at the instigation of the rather formidable Florentine family, banking family, the Medicis. Now, there's a lot of things that they got up to which we desperately don't want to discuss tonight. But one of the things that they did very, very successfully was to create a groundbreaking backdrop against which sculptors, architects, scientists, painters, philosophers, bankers, poets could all converge. And that convergence was important because it was truly remarkable. And it was an enlightenment of its time that still reverberates. It broke new ground. And we still speak the names, a bit of reverence today, that were involved in that early enlightenment, whether it's in Galileo or it's in Da Vinci, it's in Rubens, it's in Michelangelo. You can keep producing those numbers. That was a very, very important time. But I'd like you to put a Medici effect into what you did this evening. So I'd like you to think about what you did before you came to this event. Did you go through the list of attendees and think with a sinking heart, oh, it's the same lot? Or did you think, oh my goodness me, I'm not going to know anybody? Because at the end of the day, we're a pack animal and we will always automatically look to go to where we're comfortable. So when you came into the room, did you scan around the room to find a face that you thought, oh, that's familiar, I'll align myself to them? And are you actually now still sitting with them? If we stay on the same road with the same passengers every single day, our chances of innovation, our chances of changing a culture, our chances of risk are completely deadened. So, ladies and gentlemen, let me set you a task. for this evening, for the break. In the break, go up to somebody you have never, ever met before. Introduce yourself cold. Gosh, isn't it uncomfortable? It's incredibly uncomfortable. But innovation is supposed to be uncomfortable. Because what we then say is, do you know, when I was at that meeting, I met whoever, and we talked about whatever. And I guarantee that person will be a stranger to your network. But what you have done is you've introduced a Medici intersection, the intersection between disciplines, which is where change occurs. It is productive. And if we stay within the same value networks, we aren't productive. What we do isn't innovation. It is the inevitability of stalemate, and ultimately, it's obsolescence. So, different mindset that we're going to ask you to adopt later on this evening, if you're up for it. And you might succeed. You might actually have some fun. You might meet somebody that, you know, might make a difference to the rest of your life. Who would know? But you might also fail. And those failures are wonderful. Everybody should fail many, many times. And forensic science fails many times. Because if we're going to get it right, we have to understand where the points of failure are. And that person that you meet tonight may not be involved in your intersection at the moment, but they may well be at a later date. And we don't know when that person is going to be in the right place at the right time. Anybody who is good at innovation, and forensic science is good at innovation, I'll show you why, the most valuable thing they have is a diverse network and a deep network. It's where you know people exist, how you know what they know, and how you can interact with them. When you step into the intersection that occurs in a Medici effect between disciplines, what you do is you combine areas of different expertise and you integrate them into a new area. And those areas of creativity, innovation and invention, they don't lie in silos. And the silos of our science are chemistry, please forgive me, Derek, biology. These are silos. That's not where innovation happens. Because the more intersections you have and that you encounter, the richer becomes the network and the more we increase the opportunity to link in to untapped potential that will give us innovation. Forensic science is not a silo. It's a discipline of disciplines. So if there was any group of individuals that were in the best possible position to innovate, surely it has to be the forensic scientists. So how does this fit in with forensic science? It's already an area of fluidity that can translate out with its own inherent silos. It's an extensive array of subjects, all working in some degree of isolation. So fingerprints, if you like, is a little bit in isolation. But each one of those is aware that it has a translatory nature, and it's aware of the other subjects that are rotating around it. It has an agility of approach, and that comes with being the new kid on the block in terms of ancient sciences. Believe it or not, and you don't often hear this from scientists, it's rare these days, but forensic science is not encumbered by the restrictions associated with investment and finance, because there is no funding stream for forensic science research. So if somebody was to say, oh my goodness me, imagine what happens tomorrow that the Research Council stop funding forensic science, Professor Nick Dade and I, Derek, we'd shrug our shoulders and go, what's new? Isn't that a wonderfully liberating way, scary at times, in which to do your sciences? It's because of that challenging environment in which we have to operate and the competitive environment that forensic science has survived. And it survived because it's adept at being, at adopting stealth, at valuing agility, interdisciplinarity, honest, open, transparent collaboration and cooperation. In that alone, what forensic science does is it offers a freedom that we're now ready to capitalise on. So what do I mean by that? If you take, for example, the field of facial analysis, what forensic science will do is that it will go and it will translate in a direction where something else exists. We'll go and find somebody that we can work with. And what it might be is it might be military surveillance. And we'll apply that to a problem that we have. Or what we'll do is we'll look around at what everybody else is doing and think, oh, I could use that if I modify it just a little bit. So if the food industry is out there developing packaging that allows us to see when food is going off, what the forensic scientist is thinking about is, could I use that to do something about narrowing down the time death interval? Or could I be using that to age blood stains, for example? We will take everybody else's technology and we will use it. What's important is that forensic science and its scientists has no shame whatsoever. What we are happy to do is to be the chameleons, to be the matchmakers, if you like, and the conduit between sciences that allows a fluidity to move between disciplines. It's a highly underestimated secret weapon. Those of us, therefore, who just view forensic science as the application of science to the courtroom are missing a tremendous trick in here. Because if we only consider it as that subject, all we're guilty of doing is looking at it like the south face of the Eiger. It says, if forensic science, as we apply it to the criminal justice system, is everything, all we're doing is looking at one place. Imagine what opens up with your translational ability as you move around the different faces of the Eiger. You start to think about translating at the intersections between disciplines. And we've heard them, the intersections between pharma, between medicine, between any aspect of the global problems that our society faces. Forensic science, if we look at it as just being the courtroom, we're underselling it beyond anything that you could imagine. She is a new kid on the block, but do you know that her ability and her flexibility at this time, as we apply it to all the other areas in which we have scientific problems, forensic science gives us that Medici moment, that ambassador moment that we can use that says forensic science can be used as a way forward. I don't know about you, but it was something that was said at the last meeting that we gave, and it was by a member of the press, I believe, when they said, this is probably one of the first reports I've ever seen out of the government that isn't asking for more money. Isn't it refreshing to read a report that isn't saying we need more money? Because actually what Sir Mark and his team are asking us to do is much more important than that. It's much more inventive and much more innovative than that. What they're asking us to do is to change our behaviour. They're asking us to hunt down the intersections between the different disciplines. They're asking us to break down association barriers between different sciences, exploit the opportunities. They're asking us to effect a cultural change. That's much more important than asking for more money. So I have to say, for me, and I never expected to ever be in a position of having to stand in front of this kind of audience and to be able to say the words, that for me, this is one of the most exciting reports that I think I've read in a long time because of the opportunities that it opens if we are prepared to change. I think this is what genuine innovation looks like, because it takes us out of our comfort zones, it takes us out of the silos of science, and it says if you really believe in innovation, innovation happens in the Medici intersections between those disciplines. Forensic science, it's not in the high academic portals of the ivory towers. It's been referred to, I'm afraid, as it's not a clean science, it's a dirty science. It's a dirty science because of what it has to do in the courtrooms. But it's a flexible set of sciences, it's an agile set of sciences, and there's a huge amount that we can learn from that, and there's a huge amount of opportunity that that gives us. Ladies and gentlemen, people change culture, and it's culture that changes innovation. And I firmly believe that this report has given us the permission and the pathway and the guidance to be able to change that culture. And for me, that's an incredibly empowering situation for us to face. Thank you.